Welcome to It's a Crime. I'm your host, Margaret McLean, and I'm back with a twisted case.
Commonwealth vs. Cameron Reed, indictment 22CR117.
The Commonwealth vs. Cameron Reed. Did she really kill a Boston cop?
And I sure hope the prosecution comes to their senses and realizes they have no case because they've charged the wrong person.
That the defendant, Cameron Reed, killed John O'Keefe.
We know who did it.
There's 42 separate witnesses, 56 exhibits, over 1,400 pages of transcript.
We know. And we know who spearheaded this cover-up. You all know.
Yes, we do.
What a ride this is going to be.
These people were not engaged in any cover-up.
The District Attorney Morrissey and his office are targets of a federal investigation.
And I'm going to provide you with a unique angle from that of a former prosecutor. The courthouse is only a half an hour from my recording studio, so I'll be right where the action is. I'll also have my team of experts pitching in. Why am I obsessed with this case? Because it's loaded with drama. It's about the alleged murder of a respected and well-liked Boston police officer, John O'Keefe, by his girlfriend, Cameron Reed. There's also accusations of evidence being planted, a law enforcement conspiracy, a deadly fight, even a dog bite, allegations that the DA's office presented false testimony to the grand jury. There's a federal probe into how this case was handled at the local level. And then you have a Massachusetts town bitterly divided over what really happened during a blizzard in January of 2022. The town is Canton, which is about 25 minutes from Boston, and residents have really taken sides. Some think Cameron Reed is guilty, while others are convinced she was framed for murder by the police. I mean, people have lost friendships over it. You go to the Dedham courthouse where the case is being heard, and you see people holding signs and chanting and wearing their t-shirts. It's gotten so tumultuous that the judge ordered a buffer zone around the courthouse to keep the demonstrators back. I've never seen that before in a case. So let's get to it. In this episode, I'll provide you with a synopsis of the prosecution's case, and in the next, I'll highlight the defense. I'm going to begin with the most important person in this saga, the victim John O'Keefe, JJ. He was only 46 years old when he was killed. I mean, this guy was in his prime, handsome, a thick head of brown hair, warm Irish eyes, and a genuine smile. I had to know more about him. So John's brother Paul put me in touch with one of his best friends. There are so many outstanding things to say about John. But what stands out for me is the compassion he exhibited for others. His sister died of a brain tumor, and her husband died within months of a heart attack, leaving two young children, ages 3 and 6, without parents. Now John, who had been enjoying a single lifestyle in Boston, stepped up and took those kids in. He became their guardian. He arranged his whole life. He moved to the suburbs and took a step back in his career as a longtime Boston police officer. He went to a less prestigious desk job so that he could be truly involved as a parent, go to all the activities and their school stuff. He loved those kids. And now they've lost him too. Cameron Reed is the other main character involved. She's the defendant standing trial for killing John. Cameron's attractive, with long brown hair, blonde highlights, fit. The cameras can't get enough of her. She's also a smart cookie, an equity analyst and adjunct professor at Bentley University. Cameron's vivacious and well-liked, and she comes from a good family, too. So what's the tragic story here? Well, to start, they met each other and fell in love and dated for 2 years. The couple pretty much lived together. She's from Mansfield, yet she spent most of her time at John's house in Canton. And she was very involved with the two young kids. Now, their relationship was far from perfect. They had major ups and downs. Lots of drama, but we'll get to that. This crazy saga starts out with a storm, of all things. It was a major blizzard, and it was slamming its way towards New England, a big nor'easter. It was also a Friday night, January 28th, 2022. Snowing hard, I remember it. There was an electricity in the air. The news stations were talking about it. Like, we're going to lose power. You better hunker down and stay in. Well, it's also fun to go out during a blizzard. A good time for a bar crawl. And that's exactly what John and Karen did. They started out at C.F. McCarthy's, an Irish pub in Canton, and ended up at the Waterfall Bar and Grill. It was definitely a night of heavy drinking. At some point, John spots his neighbor, Chris Elbert, who's also out celebrating the storm with a group of people. Among them was Brian Elbert, another Boston cop, and his sister-in-law, Jennifer McCabe. Pay attention, because these people will become major characters in the story. So they're all drinking, and before you know it, it's last call at the bar. Come on, who wants to stop partying during a major blizzard? So Brian Elbert invites people over for an after-party at his house at 34 Fairview Road in Canton. Sounds fun, so John wants to go. He and Karen jump into her car. She's driving. They get directions to the house from Jennifer McCabe, who's already there. John and Karen pull up to the house and stay in the car for about a half an hour. Jennifer texts, "Hello," wondering if they're going to come in. And then the car pulls away. What happens next is the crux of this case. There are two completely different stories. Bottom line, John O'Keefe lost his life. As the next morning, John is discovered frozen in the snow in the front yard of 34 Fairview. He had multiple skull fractures, two swollen black eyes, cuts and scrapes on his right arm, and blood all around his nose and mouth. He also had vomit in his mouth, and hypothermia had set in. Just imagine, John was only dressed in a long-sleeved t-shirt, jeans, socks, one sneaker on. The medical examiner will testify later on at trial, but I wanted to know if he suffered. So I reached out to an expert in the field, Dr. Ken Lang, a former homicide detective and now a nationally recognized forensic consultant.
Did he suffer? He's not insulated very well. He's going to lose his body temperature quick. As the report indicated, once you get below that 80-degree mark, then things start going south with the organs starting to shut down. But he also had a head injury. At that point, I think he loses consciousness and then just passes.
As you can imagine, the news was shocking. We've got the death of a young Boston police officer, and it's John O'Keefe of all people. He was so well-liked, had so many friends, such a tight-knit family. Hundreds of people turned out for John's wake and funeral. The family was just crushed. So what really happened to John O'Keefe? Can we get to the truth? There's two sides to the story. I'm going to start with the prosecution side, basically a summary of what's contained in the police reports. Canton police get a 911 call at 6:04 a.m. for a man lying in the snow at 34 Fairview. They rush to the scene and see three women who are desperately kneeling in the snow performing CPR on John. But by that time, he was cold to the touch and not breathing. The women were Karen Reed, Jennifer McCabe, and Carrie Roberts. After John was transported from the scene and later pronounced dead at the hospital, the police began looking for evidence. They found blood in the snow, a broken cocktail glass, and later on, after digging in the snow, they found pieces of red plastic that looked like it came from a taillight. State Police Trooper Michael Proctor becomes lead investigator, and they start interviewing witnesses. A key prosecution witness is going to be Katie McLaughlin. Now, she was a first responder with the Canton Fire Department. She basically arrived on the scene, saw John's condition, and said, "What happened to this guy?" She claims that Karen Reed turned to her friend frantically and said, "I hit him! I hit him! I hit him!" Another key witness is Jennifer McCabe. She told them what we know so far about the Waterfall Bar and the after party. But what she says happened around 4:53 in the morning gets interesting. She receives a phone call from a very distraught Karen Reed looking for her boyfriend John. Karen then drives over to Jennifer's house and says, "The last time I remember seeing John was at the waterfall." Jennifer basically says, no, I saw you guys leaving the bar together, and then you parked in front of the party at 34 Fairview. Karen also told Jennifer that she and John had gotten into an argument the last time she'd seen him. Carrie Roberts comes over to Jennifer's house because Karen had called her too, distraught, looking for John. And Karen further said, "John's dead, Carrie. Carrie, I wonder if he's dead. It's snowing. He got hit by a plow." So they jump in their cars. Jennifer drives Karen's black Lexus because she's way too hysterical to get behind the wheel. On the way, Jennifer claims that Karen asked her, "Could I have hit him? Did I hit him?" Karen also tells Jennifer that her back taillight was cracked. So when they arrive at the O'Keefe house, Jennifer hops out of the car and notices, the rear taillight was cracked and pieces were missing. They're worried at this point, so they drive over to 34 Fairview, where the party was, and as soon as they get there, Karen says she sees John. Now, Jennifer and Carrie did not see him at that point. Karen screams to open the car door, open the car door, and then she bolts right over to the spot where John's lying in the snow. It was still blizzarding at that point, and his body was covered by at least 6 inches of snow. I thought that was very odd that she'd know exactly where to find him. If you couldn't see him, he's buried. So I asked Dr. Lang about that.
I thought that was interesting that she kind of went right over there and almost like she knew where she hit him. Of all this area here that we have, here's the good spot to start looking. And oh my gosh, we found them. I find that peculiar. I think it's an interesting fact. I think it's a fact that the prosecutor will settle on for a little bit during the court process just to make sure that the jurors have heard that. How is it she goes to that one spot and finds him there?
Yeah. In my experience trying cases, sometimes something so subtle can really hit home with jurors. So next, Karen hops on top of him, starts performing CPR, and also yells at Jennifer to Google, "How long do you have to be left outside to die from hypothermia?" In episode 2, that Google search will become important. Around 4:30 in the afternoon, Trooper Proctor and his partner travel to Karen's parents' house. They see Karen's black SUV parked in the driveway with its broken taillight and other damage. They interview Karen, notice she's very distraught. She basically tells them about the drinking at the bars and how she dropped John off at the after party on Fairview, made a 3-point turn in the street, and went home. She never saw him enter the house. The troopers also asked if they had any previous arguments. Karen admitted to one in the morning. Just one. Karen's car was towed, and they found a hair on the rear passenger side corner panel and glass on the rear bumper. Now, the state also performed a crash reconstruction, which shows that Karen's car went in reverse at a high rate of speed, then struck John and continued in reverse before leaving the scene. The jurors are going to be keyed in on that. And they'll prove Karen had 9 drinks at the 2 bars. John also walked out of the waterfall carrying a cocktail glass with him, which might explain why there was that glass on the scene. There were also text messages exchanged between Karen and John, which really revealed that their relationship was on the rocks. John had tried to break up with Karen a few times. And to that point, here's Assistant DA Adam Lally.
The victim and the defendant have been arguing for quite some time, numerous times over the weeks preceding this, that in one occasion the victim had attempted to break up with the defendant.
John told Karen that the relationship had run its course. But she was feisty and fought right back. And then listen to this. Karen left John a voicemail after 1 a.m. on the 29th, shortly after she dropped him off at the party. And they will definitely play this for the jury to hear. Karen says, "You are effing using me right now. You are effing another girl. You are an effing loser. F yourself, effing pervert. God, I effing hate you." And of course, she used the real F word. As a result of the investigation, Karen had to appear in Stoughton District Court, where they charged her with manslaughter, motor vehicle homicide, and leaving the scene of a motor vehicle collision causing death. She pleaded not guilty. Next, Assistant District Attorney Adam Lally presents the case to the grand jury. Now, that's a secret proceeding, but here's a glimpse at the overwhelming amount of evidence that was presented.
42 separate witnesses, 56 exhibits, over 1,400 pages of transcripts, which clearly demonstrate and indicate that the defendant, Karen Reed, killed John O'Keefe.
He also gives a motive. Basically, their relationship was at a tipping point.
The victim and the defendant have been arguing for quite some time, numerous times over the weeks preceding this, that on one occasion the victim had attempted to break up with the defendant.
Well, there you have it. Mr. Lally seems quite confident in his case. In the next episode, as promised, I will highlight the defense arguments. You'll hear about an anonymous tip that came into Karen's defense attorney, David Yannetti, and it changed everything. I mean, the entire theory of their case. It caused them to investigate deeper. You'll learn about a dark law enforcement conspiracy and cover-up, a secret federal probe into public corruption, and you'll hear why this case has prompted public outcry and become a national media obsession. So be sure to tune in to the next episode of It's a Crime. I'm your host, Margaret McLean. Thank you for listening.